Welcome to a new series of the Dissidents Podcast with your co-hosts, Jennifer Richmond and Brandy Shufutinsky. In this series, we explore the radical roots of liberated ethnic studies, how extreme ideology is infiltrating our schools, and the aim to indoctrinate instead of educate, and our search for solutions to empower parents, teachers, and students, giving them the tools to embrace inquiry and to express their individuality.
So welcome to another edition of the Radical Roots of Ethnic Studies, a series of the Dissidents Podcast with myself, Jennifer Richmond, and co-host Brandy Shufutinsky. And Brandy, today, this is really going to be, I think, the focus on you and what you're seeing. So the Coalition for Empowered Education is putting out a letter that I'll link to in this podcast to all superintendents in California with the ask that they cancel any contracts with the Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies. And people who follow this series know that we talk about liberated ethnic studies, the problems with liberated ethnic studies. But most recently, that has become incredibly evident. And I will stop there. And Brandy, if you just get us up to date on what's going on with Israel, with Hamas, and why this has become so much more immediate in our minds.
Yeah. So, a lot of us have been talking, like you just mentioned, Jen, talking about the issues with the ideology behind critical or liberated ethnic studies and these groups that are trying to get that ideology into K-12 classrooms. I think that what we saw since the horrific attack by Hamas terrorists on October 7th, what we've seen here in the U.S. since then is really shining a light on exactly why these groups here are problematic. So the Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies is made up of roughly 33 different activist organizations that do everything from teacher training to developing curricula for all sorts of courses, including, of course, ethnic studies. They immediately after the terrorist attack, they went on their social media and started sharing posts and posting things in support of Hamas terrorism and minimizing the violence and brutality that Israelis suffered from. And there really is just one question for parents and, you know, hopefully teachers and educators and administrators also, but do you really want your kids to be learning from people that excuse violence and terrorism? Do you want people that excuse and encourage and celebrate violence and terrorism to be the ones that are shaping curricula for your kids? And that's what it comes down to. And I think that that's why it's so important that, Jen, that this letter get out, that gives voice to parents, to educators, and to students saying that this isn't what our kids should be learning. This isn't who we want shaping the minds of future generations. There is definitely a red line here that they've crossed by celebrating the massacre of Israeli civilians.
Give us an idea, and again, we'll share the letter, and we've got a few screenshots of the social media, but give us an idea of some of the things that they were calling for at the same time that people were being massacred in Israel. What were some of the things that they were calling for?
So the main one that we saw immediately after, and again, this isn't like, I'm not trying to give a history lesson on the issues between Israelis and Palestinians and other Arabs. This really is focusing on the massacre committed by a terrorist group. What happened is this group, the Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies, painted the terrorism, the massacre, the rapes, the kidnapping, the beheadings, the torture as resistance. And right. So they held rallies in support of resistance is what they called it and are still calling it. And, I think that obviously this is close to home for me and for a lot of us. The underlying fact of the matter is that rape is not resistance. Mm-hmm. And any group of people that say that, think that, believe that, celebrate that, have no place being anywhere near our kids.
Right. Right. I think that's exactly right. And also, I feel like, you know, for people who aren't very familiar with Israel and Palestine, and again, we're not going to get into a history lesson here, but I feel that what I'm seeing is people are conflating this terrorist attack with Hamas with the Palestinian issue. And I think for you and I, the biggest thing is you take that's a side issue. I mean, we can talk about that. We can talk about history, but the issue is that what happened was a terrorist attack. That was not resistance. You can talk about whether or not you believe that the Palestinians should resist. We can have history, all that kind of stuff, but that's not the point. And so when we talk about this it's the language that we use. When we talk about this in the terms of resistance, we are normalizing terrorism.
Exactly. And I mean, I will take a minute to put it in a little bit of an American historical context. When decades ago, when it was more commonplace for white lynch mobs to hunt down Black people and lynch them, there were excuses given. He was accused of raping a white woman. He was accused of having a relationship with a white woman. There was a justification for the lynching. What we're seeing today is that the Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies are giving excuses and justifications for the lynchings of Jews and of Israelis. And in fact, I would argue are calling for more of that, more of the same brutality to be inflicted upon Jews here in the United States.
So let's get into not a little bit of history necessarily with Israel and Palestine, but a little bit of history with the liberated ethnic studies model. From the get-go, it had anti-Semitic undertones. And we're seeing, I mean, can you explain a little bit about, you know, even before what happened with Hamas, it had anti-Semitic undertones. Can you explain a little bit more what that looked like then and what we think that can look like now?
Yeah, so their whole ideology sits on a foundation of oppressor versus oppressed, this binary, where there's, you know, everyone fits in a box of either being an oppressor or being a victim of oppression. And what ends up happening is then victims of oppression, so-called victims of oppression, are justified in doing anything and everything necessary to resist their so-called oppressor. And how that relates to anti-Semitism is that anybody, any group, any individual who has real or perceived success is labeled an oppressor. And what that's translated into is that, you know, the Jewish people in the United States of America, who are a teeny tiny minority, but may be overrepresented in certain spaces of quote unquote success, then are painted as, well, the only way they got there is because they were oppressors and oppressed somebody else to achieve that so-called success. And so anything negative that happens to those people is then justified. And again, this goes back to what I mentioned a couple of minutes ago about the justifications given for the lynching of Black Americans. And that's where it gets dangerous. But with this ideology and framework where everybody is either an oppressor or is a victim of oppression, then it doesn't allow for the context of even people who have achieved success can also be in situations where they've been victimized. And there's also no, and people that have been victimized also are in situations where they may hold certain levels of power. And so there's no justification for certain behaviors and things that follow, because one person can be both oppressed and oppressor at the same time in the course of his or her lives. And I think that it's this ideology that is helping fuel anti-Semitism. And again, this ideology is foundational to critical or liberated ethnic studies pedagogy.
This reminds me of the conversation that we had on this series with Amy Lesserman, and we were talking about inconvenient minorities. And one of the things that she mentioned was Palestinians take a huge role in the California Liberated or the Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies curriculum, a huge role, whereas some others, you know, take a very small role, including, you know, the Jewish diaspora. But she was talking about like Lebanese and other people that just, like, for some reason, the Palestinian movement has just been a giant in the ethnic studies curricula. And what we were talking about at that time was there was a agenda behind that. There was an ideology behind that and a reason why a small minority took the lion's share of the focus in a lot of this curricula. Do you want to speak a little bit about that as well and how that came to be?
I mean, I'll always argue or have argued ethnic studies has been a vehicle to institutionalize anti-Semitism, whether be it anti-Zionism or just plain Jew hatred into K-12 schools. And the best model that they have to do that is the idea of teach Palestine. And I think that there's a pretty clear track to see how that's happened. But I think that it's also important to note what gets left behind and missed in that. There's this idea that, you know, ethnic studies is about teaching more about Black American, Latino American, Asian American, and Native American histories and experiences, because those histories and experiences and narratives have been historically left out or, you know, minimized in social studies, literature, all, you know, curricula. But the Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies, what they put out isn't teaching that.
Right.
It's casting aside. And in fact, some of the critical, the Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies activists say straight out, you know, this isn't about teaching the four groups. It's about teaching oppressor versus oppressed. I mean, they say it in black and white in their trainings and in their materials. So this isn't something that, you know, I'm guessing or hypothesizing about. They I'm taking them at their word. This is what they've said.
Right. Right. And I think that's what we've kind of argued for in our version or vision of ethnic studies, is that we are pro teaching Black history or Hispanic history and literature and all this stuff. But the ethnic studies model that we're looking at with the Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies is not that at all. I mean, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
I mean, it's a curriculum of ideology. If anyone yes. looks through any of these, you know, roughly 33 organizations and what they're trying to teach, you'll get very little scholarship and you'll get a lot of ideology.
Yeah. So I want to, as someone who is not Jewish, I want to go through some of the slogans that we've been hearing that I think that if you don't know what you're listening to, seem really benign and seem like, oh, well, why not? So Free Palestine, for example, and there's a slogan specifically around Free Palestine. It is
from the river to the sea.
Explain that to people, what that means.
So geographically, what it means is from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea will be an Arab-Palestinian state, meaning that the Jewish Democratic State of Israel and all of its citizens will cease to exist. And you'll hear these chants and see these signs from the river to the sea, which is a call for genocide. It's a call to eradicate all of the people that live in that land, that live in the land of Israel, who, although majority Jewish, are not all Jewish. So all of the ethnic minorities, the Druzim, the Israeli Arabs, the Bedouins, and of course the Jews would be pushed out, pushed into the sea, and be killed. And there are, you know, geopolitical debates and conversations about two states or one state or a federation of states and all of that. And that's, I'll leave that argument aside. The call from the river to the sea is a genocidal call.
Right.
It's no different to me than my oldest son Dimitri has written about this, the rebel yell.
Mm. Say a little bit more about that, because that is a really
interesting. Have him on here to explain.
We should. I will put yeah. his piece in our as a link. But okay. That's just interesting. Say a little more, because I don't feel that your average non-Jewish American really understands these slogans, and they're easy to buy into, particularly if you're sympathetic to the Palestinian right. plight, which is fine. You know, nothing that we're here are we saying, like, don't be sympathetic to a group that, you know, has been downtrodden, but it's the terrorism that we're having a problem with. And so these slogans become normalized as, and as someone who doesn't know the history is like, oh, well, sure, Palestine, like, you know, okay, you know, let them have their own land. But this call is not that. This call is a genocidal call. And that's where people have to be really careful in this day and age with language and understanding exactly what they're saying. And that's the point of this conversation. But anyways, if you don't mind, and I know Dimitri's not here, but could you give us more on that parallel of the rebel yell? And
yeah, there are certain things that are used as propaganda and that are calls to arms. And we can talk about it. And again, I think that Dimitri obviously can explain it a whole lot better than I can. But the idea is that these calls are a call to arms, the call for violence, like the rebel yell in, you know, Confederate times was. Mm-hmm. And an example is that when people say a free Palestine, they don't mean a free Palestinian state. They mean an Arab Palestinian state free of Jews. And that's a very big distinction. The most recent terror attack by Hamas that was just committed a few weeks ago wasn't to establish a state for Palestinian Arabs. It was to kill Jews. When you see people chanting now in the streets of, you know, the cities all over the United States and in Western Europe and everywhere else, there's a slogan: "We don't want no two states. We want 48." And what they're referring to is they don't want two states. They don't want there to be an independent Jewish democratic state of Israel alongside a Palestinian Arab state. They don't want a Jewish state to exist at all. They want 1948, before the establishment of the modern state of Israel. So before the Jewish people reestablished the Jewish state in the Jewish people's indigenous homeland. So these calls are, and that shift is a little bit more recent. Years back, we would hear more calls for, you know, Oslo and two states. Now that it's very common to hear, we don't want no two states, we want all of it, or we don't want no two states, we want 48. And you'll see the signs, I mean, at any of these rallies that have been very supportive and encouraging of Hamas.
So I hadn't heard that one. So with the 48, can you, again, maybe I missed it. What is the 48?
It's 1948. So the
1948. Okay, I got it. So when they say we don't want two states, we want 48, is they want to go back to 1948 before the establishment of the modern Israeli state.
Right. And I'll be a bit of a history nerd here. It's also silly because, okay, they want to go back to the British mandate when British was an imperial power. It doesn't make sense, but a lot of it doesn't. Either way, it's a call to get rid of Jewish self-determination in the indigenous land of the Jewish people.
And another thing that we've noticed that's really disturbing is in response to this most recent event, CLES, as well as some other organizations, are coming out with ways for educators how to teach around this event. And a lot of it is rather benign. And again, I just want to make sure that our educators and our parents and our students know what they're looking at. A lot of it, you and I have looked at it together. A lot of it is history lessons, you know, teaching around like the how Israel came to be, teaching around the British, you know, rule of the area. So a lot of it is, there's not anything to really get up in arms about. But there's two things in particular that we are noticing that are missing from these curricula. And I think that they're subtle. And so if you're not looking for them, you won't see them. But what are those, in your mind, those two missteps that some of these new curricula are coming out with? What are they missing?
I'm going to give you a couple more than two. So.
Okay, go for it.
I'll try to be quick and short. So one of them is the idea that there never were peace processes put in place that was rejected by Palestinian Arab leadership to establish a Palestinian Arab state. Where every time, and I believe there's roughly a dozen over the past, six, seven decades that have been proposed in Israeli governmental leadership, whether it was a more liberal administration, Israeli administration, or a more conservative one agreed to, all of them have been rejected outright by Palestinian leadership. So that's one thing that gets missed. The bigger thing that gets missed that this more recent terror attack really highlights is the idea to conflate terrorism with a call for a Palestinian Arab state. So there are plenty of people and plenty of Israelis, plenty of Jews around the world that have believed and supported the idea of two states for two people. And they, of course, wouldn't support Hamas or any of the actions that Hamas inflicted upon the Israeli people. because that's not going to lead to a Palestinian state. Mm-hmm. And so what's happened, I think, in a lot of these materials that are being used in the classroom is that you have a kind of a conflation of terrorism with resistance, or terrorism with the establishment of a Palestinian Arab state.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so for our listeners, in this letter that will be linked to in this podcast, we also created an alternative set of resources. So when you are in the classroom trying to teach this, you know, there is a much more, as per usual, as for everything, a much more complex and nuanced story. And so we give additional resources on how to teach around this that doesn't conflate the Palestinian resistance with terrorism, and also gives, you know, a kind of a more nuanced view. I mean, the situation in that area, I've been learning so much just going through this myself, again, not being Jewish, but, you know, when Egypt at one point owned what is now the Gaza Strip. And, you know, there was, at that time, they also didn't give a state to the Palestinians. So this is just so complex, and to teach it in this binary view of right and wrong and conflate resistance with terrorism is this is what scares me, is when we do this and when we use language this way and abuse language this way, then we normalize, I'm using that word a lot lately in this podcast, but then that's when we normalize anti-Semitism, and we don't even know that we're doing it. I mean, a lot of people are doing this with you know, genuine hearts and humanitarian ideas, and they don't even realize the harm that they're doing when they're not looking at the language that they're using critically.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with that. I think that the other piece is that teaching about what just happened, it's connected to the overall decades of terrorism and trying to establish two states and the rest of that. But Hamas and what they did wasn't to establish a Palestinian Arab state. And I think that that needs to be discussed and taught about more. Mm-hmm. It's really like saying the lynch mob that lynched we estimate 4,000 Black Americans, that the lynchings of that was to establish like a white supremacist state or a whites only state, I'm sure that white supremacists would be happy with that. But the goal was to kill those Black people.
Correct.
And the goal of Hamas was to kill those Israelis. It was to murder them.
Right. Right. There was no other intention. There was no other lead up to it where there was even a discussion of states. And then all of a sudden, you know, the tensions just overflowed. I mean, yes.
It was a lynching. I mean, it was a mass lynching.
Yeah.
And to see education leaders and groups and activists take the side of the lynchers is like, I'm not so shocked, because I think we've been following these groups, but it's unacceptable. Our students deserve so much more.
I know, but I would say it is unacceptable. I would say that the language that is being used is so nuanced and so subtle that the average person, unless they are informed, can't see it. I mean, again, Free Palestine sounds like, that sounds fine. You know, what they don't understand is that's not even what Hamas was doing, as you just mentioned. But Free Palestine is a slogan that calls for the eradication of the Jewish, you know, people. It's not just a separate, you know, a two-state solution.
Yeah.
We might stop here or around about here, but let me ask you this in case this is worth bringing in, because this is something that's really interesting to me. A lot of this propaganda around Zionism really started in the Soviet Union. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's a fascinating, I mean, I know we're getting a little bit into history and a little bit maybe too in depth, but this isn't new, and it was used before with a particular ideological aim in mind. And if you can at least give us some background or some history where this kind of originated in the first place, I think that might better inform us and what we're seeing too.
Perfect. No, I'd love to. And I want to say that I'm doing this because of the brilliant scholarship of Dr. Isabella Tabarovsky, who talks about this and writes about it and speak on it so eloquently, and she's such a scholar. So this is, it's part of the anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, as anti-Zionist anti-Semitism that we're seeing come out of the far progressive left, and which is where the ties into Marxism and communism and neo-Marxism kind of come into play. But the rhetoric is the same. It's there's this idea of Zionism as something negative, as being settler colonialist, as being something that needs to be overthrown, actually has roots in Soviet propaganda, from the Protocols of the Elders of Zion to other Soviet propagandists. And again, I think that I'm not sure if I've seen anyone be able to explain it or write about it or be so clearly as Isabella Taborowski.
Yeah, and I will link to some of Isabella's stuff. And what's really interesting, just as a side note, because I love how you've been giving us examples of the lynching and examples with Hamas for us to be able to kind of put it in perspective. Isabella wrote the afterword for our book, Letters in Black and White. And it was funny because when we first asked her to do it, she's like, "You're talking about race in America. Like, I don't know. Like, what do I know?" And then she read the book and she was like, "Oh my gosh." And again, it was around language. She's like, "What I see about how we're talking about race is so similar to her studies on how the Soviets propagandized Zionism, and really the origin of this hatred and this, you know, anti-Zionism came from Soviet propaganda." And clearly it's still alive and well. So I will, for people who are interested in this aspect, I will link to a few of Isabella's pieces as well. Yeah, she does a fabulous job. But that's scary.
It is. I think the other part that comes from Soviet propaganda is this idea of Palestinian nationalism. And mm-hmm. and that's a, I need to look and see there if I can find other articles or pieces that have been written about that. Maybe we can link to some of those too.
Okay, that sounds great. And for our listeners, again, we will link to the letter that is being sent to California superintendents. We'll make sure that it's downloadable. Feel free to use it in your own school districts. Feel free. You don't have to be in California. As we have mentioned on this podcast several times, this, even though it's centered in California and is perhaps the most egregious in California, this liberated ethnic studies model, we have seen it spreading actually all over the United States, even in places that you wouldn't expect, like Texas and Florida. But, you know, we've seen it a lot. We had a great podcast, if anyone wants to go back, with Kofi in Minnesota. So this seed is being planted, and feel free to use our resources where you see fit.
Yeah, and I just want to mention quickly that members of this Coalition for Liberated Ethnic Studies, they are active in states beyond California.
Right. And we have a list of the 33 that are a part of them too, so that if you might, you know, as our listeners see someone or an organization that you recognize, this is much, it goes beyond California for sure. All right, Brandy, thank you so much.
Thanks, Trent.